Greetings and welcome to Soundography, a crash course in music, one band at a time. I'm Brian Ibbett.
And I am Hammond Chamberlain.
And I think for this episode, we're going to rename the show Soundography.
Oh, I see what you did there.
I just thought of that, actually. Sondheim is our subject today. Stephen Sondheim, specifically. You know, not Fred or Larry Sondheim, but Stephen, the most popular of all the Sondheims. And this is going to be kind of a focus on his work. It's interesting because this is less of a typical Soundography going through a whole band's catalog, because he himself is the writer in most cases, music and lyrics, in a couple of cases just lyrics, but is such a prolific creator of music that you can't really say, oh yeah, you know, I loved his first album, not so, you know, fond of his second album. It's all in the way that his stuff is presented. I mean, there's some albums where you hear him perform his own stuff, but they're more like demos and things.
Yeah, and just because here's so much stuff, Brian and I actually kind of made a list of shows that we would cover, and then the others we'll name drop, but we're not going to go too much into, just because there's just so much.
There's
and,
a lot. Yeah.
And digging into show tunes, that's a different kind of ball of wax than listening to, you know, Aerosmith.
Right, and going to track your album by album by album. Very true. All right, well, let's talk about Stephen Sondheim, who was born March 22nd, 1939. As of this recording, he's alive and kicking at 89 years old, about to turn 90 in about 2 weeks.
Yeah.
He's viewed as one of the most influential and important figures in musical theater of the 20th century.
So last year, I read a book called Stephen Sondheim.
Oh, there's more.
What?
I said, congratulations. Oh, there's more. Because I was cutting you off and I read a book. All right, continue.
So last year I read a book called Stephen Sondheim and the Reinvention of the American Musical Theater. And it's this academic, hardcore look at all of his works. And if you're even slightly interested in him or musical theater, it's worth digging into. I loved it. And as soon as I have another chunk of time to revisit, I probably will, because I enjoyed it that much.
That's cool. I went the cheaters route and watched an HBO documentary called Six by Sondheim, which is all these interviews with Stephen, as well as each of his musicals, and then performances of six of the not really greatest hits, but a lot of the greatest hits from those musicals. So there's something from Merrily We Roll Along, actually a couple, like bookends it, Send in the Clowns, Sunday from Sunday in the Park with George. Sometimes they use brand new recorded footage. They have Jarvis Cocker from the band Pulp, who I really like, doing I'm Still Here.
That's
and
cool.
They've got like the original video of the guy from West Side Story doing Not Somewhere. Shoot, one of the songs from West Side Story. I can't remember which one. But anyway, it's an HBO documentary. So if you've got HBO or HBO Go or HBO Now or HBO No, then it's totally worth checking out. And you've already got access to it. Really cool stuff. He brought a new style, respectability, and depth to American musical theater. And he tackled topics and issues that were unexpected and seen as sophisticated for musical theater at the time. He wrote his first musical while at private prep school in Pennsylvania. The show was called By George. As a child, his parents divorced, and one of his friends was James Hammerstein, the son of Oscar. Was it Stein? Hammerstein?
I think it's Hammerstein. Rodgers and Hammerstein. Yeah. Hammerstein.
Yeah, definitely. One of his friends was James Hammerstein, who's the son of Oscar Hammerstein. And Oscar became like a father to Stephen and helped him develop his love of theater. He also met Hal Prince, who he later worked with extensively at the opening of South Pacific. And the musical he wrote in school, By George, was seen as a success and helped his self-esteem and confidence. However, when he showed it to Hammerstein without telling him who wrote it, Hammerstein hated it. Hated it. He then went through it, and Hammerstein taught him about songwriting and musical theater. Hammerstein also prepared a course of work to help teach Stephen how to write musicals.
So he had him write shows, a series of shows. One of them was the one that he admired, and then later that one later became All That Glitters. One of them was on a play he liked but had issues. He used High Tor, and a show that has already been dramatized, and he used Mary Poppins, totally unrelated to the Disney film, and then an original one that he called Climb High.
Okay. Cool. Very cool. How is it related? Unrelated? I mean, it's just unrelated to the Disney movie, but it's based on the play, right?
Yes. Yeah, the book or whatever it is. Yeah.
Gotcha.
He didn't write. He didn't write Chim Chimney.
Yeah, oh, I gotcha. Okay, now I gotcha. I see what you're saying. So the story, but not the music. None of these assignments, by the way, were produced professionally. He attended college and started working on learning and perfecting his craft. He also spent some time in Hollywood working on TV shows. In 1954, he was commissioned to write a few songs for a show that was never produced when he was 22. The show was called Saturday Night, but the money needed was never raised.
So this was not produced until 1997. It was based on a front porch in Flatbush.
Oh, cool. Okay, so like one of those from stoops.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I listened to the 1997 recording, and it is so cool. It totally reminds you of like the Seth Farland musicals that he does for Family Guy. Mm-hmm. That voice and that style.
Like a million watt electric light. It shines up the city as it climbs. And I gotta spend another Saturday night at home with the Sunday Times.
Moonlight on Flatbush Avenue. Really, really cool. Totally has to be an influence on what Seth MacFarlane was doing at the time. In 1957, he worked as a lyricist only for West Side Story. This was a musical version of Romeo and Juliet, of course, the Sharks, the Jets. I love West Side Story. Never seen a stage production of it, but love the movie. And this was so cool to kind of go back and revisit this and listen to this music again.
You're a family man. You're never alone. You're never disconnected. You're home with your own. When company's expected, you're well protected. Then you are set with a capital J, which you'll never forget till they cart you away when you're a jet. You.
I like West Side Story. It's not my favorite of his, so it's there.
Sure. Okay. In 1959, he worked on Gypsy, which was based on the memoir of Gypsy Rose Lee. The show contains many songs that would become standards. Everything's Coming Up Roses, Let Me Entertain You, All I Need Is the Girl, and Together Wherever We Go. It's considered one of the most complex characters, or Gypsy, the character is considered to be one of the most complex characters in musical theater.
Yeah, that academic look at Sondheim really spent a lot of time explaining how the character evolves and changes over the course of the show. It's really deep.
This is it's one of these things where when I'm listening to the soundtrack and I couldn't have told you, you know, I've heard Together We're Gonna Go Through It Together, you know, all that stuff, and Let Me Entertain You, and I had no idea that they all came from Gypsy. So as I'm going through the soundtrack, I'm like, oh, I know this one. Oh, I know this one too. Look at this one. So really cool soundtrack to listen to. In 1962, he came out with A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum. It's funny because I can't really say came out with the album A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum. This was inspired by the farce and ancient Rome with a touch of vaudeville silliness. And this is the story of Pseudolus and his attempts to win his freedom.
Somewhere, cavorting with someone young and fair, disporting in every shameless whim. Just wait till I get my hands on him, I'll hold him.
So I worked on a production of this in the early 2000s, and it was a ton of fun to build. It was just so wacky, and there's just so many things you can do with it, both as far as costuming and set and choreography, and it's all just like slapstick vaudeville, and it lends itself to just ever have your imagination run amok.
Yeah, and this was another one. We'll talk about the song later on in the show, but this is another one that where a famous song came from it that I didn't know was from A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum. And what I really like about these albums, especially some of the ones that I'd never even heard about before, is that you listen to the soundtrack and you're kind of able to piece together what the musical is about from that, just because of the way how well it's written and then recognizing character voices that come in and do different songs. In 1964, He worked on Anyone Can Whistle, a 9-performance bomb on its first run. Since then, it's seen some successes, and the show marked the stage musical debut of Angela Lansbury. Murder, She Wrote, Angela Lansbury.
I was about to say, maybe she killed the show. If she didn't, then she found out who did.
Right, exactly.
The song Everybody Says Don't and There Won't Be Trumpets are widely performed in like rep, you know, concerts and just vocal concerts.
Everybody says don't, everybody says don't walk on the grass, don't disturb the peace, don't skate on the ice. Well, I say do, I say walk on the grass, it was meant to feel, I say sail.
The next year he worked on Do I Hear a Waltz? This was plagued with problems from the start. This was an adaptation of the 1952 play The Time of the Cuckoo, and it was met with mixed reviews. The documentary that I just watched talked about how he wrote this for the wrong reasons. Basically, it wasn't because he was in love with the material. He was kind of writing it to keep working, to make some money, to give, like, basically write something for specific stars. And he realized that's probably why it wasn't as successful as some of his other stuff. In 1970, he came out with Company. This is the story of Robert, or Bobby, and his inability to commit to a relationship. It has 5 married couples who are friends of his, and then his 3 girlfriends. And this is more of a concept musical. It doesn't really follow a straight plot, but hinges on his 35th birthday party. And then all these sub-stories are segmented into little vignettes.
This is one of the first musicals to really dive into adult themes and relationships. It wasn't the bright, happy, single through line, girl meets boy, boy meets girl, they fall in love, 16 going on 17 kind of musicals. This was something far more real for musical theater.
Yeah, and some people misunderstood it. They thought that it was an anti-marriage story, and I guess it's more of a... No, I mean, you know, Robert decides it's better to be with somebody than to be alone. And I don't think it's ever revealed which of the 3 girlfriends he chooses at the end, is it?
I don't think so. I think it's left to interpretation.
It certainly isn't apparent by the music. And this is one of the things that I want to, after doing this week of listening to his music, this is one of the plays or our musicals that I really want to see. I want to figure out a way to watch. Probably I'll rent one of the Broadway production movies that have been made, but movie adaptation made of this one, unfortunately, but I think it would be really cool to see. 1971, he worked on Follies. This story is about a reunion in an old Broadway theater that is set to be demolished and turned into a parking lot. The attendees of the union are members of the last company to perform there, and it played between world wars. It focuses on 2 couples, Buddy and Sally, and Ben and Phyllis, and as the show moves through the story, ghosts of their former selves join them in the musical numbers.
And this is not your typical musical because it's not bright and colorful. I mean, these people start off kind of miserable and they don't get much better as the show progresses.
Yeah, I mean, it's a sad story. I again, can't tell from the soundtrack if, you know, for some reason the theater saved at the end. That's kind of what I would expect from a story like this, but that would kind of give it too much of a happy ending. So I kind of like, maybe I like it better not knowing. I don't know. let's see, A Little Night Music in 1973. This was inspired by the movie Smiles of a Summer Night. Focuses on the romantic lives of a few couples. The next year, Frogs, 1974, adapted from the ancient Greek comedy. The story is about Dionysus and their trip to Hades to bring George Bernard Shaw back to life. And also in the musical, Shakespeare competes with Shaw for the title of best playwright, and he wins. So Dionysus brings back Shakespeare in hopes of saving civilization through art. In 1976, he worked on Pacific Overtures. The show follows the struggles of Japan over the course of many years to be westernized, and it's told from the point of view of the Japanese. 1979, Sweeney Todd, the Demon Barber of Fleet Street. This is the story of a man who is sent to prison on a trumped-up charge by a judge who is lusting after his wife. He escapes and finds an ally in a baker, and then he goes about exacting his revenge on those who wronged him.
Pale and his eye was odd. He shaved the faces of gentlemen who never thereafter were heard of again. He trod a path that few have trod, did Sweeney Todd, a demon barber of Fleet Street.
Now, I have worked on no less than 8 productions of the show. Mm-hmm. And I mean, wow. the cannibalism and the cooking and the hatred and the bloodshed, if you boil all that down, it's basically a love story. It's like 5 different love stories, and it's real basic. And once you see that, it changes the point of view, and every version seems to have a different spin. Like sometimes they really focus on the judge being a creep, and it's just how it's staged. They don't change anything. It's just how staging. And like Tim Burton's one really brought Ms. Lovitz alive as a character. Usually she's just this evil bird on his shoulder. Uh-huh. And he brought her to life as a woman who wanted a family. And she was going about the wrong way, but she wanted a family. And she saw how to have it with Toby and Sweeney. But it's fantastic. I love this show for so many, many reasons.
Helena Bonham Carter character, uh-huh. Is that right?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. So that's basically the only two films I've seen based on Sondheim stuff is West Side Story and Sweeney Todd. And he didn't even do the music for West Side Story. Bernstein did, but Sweeney Todd is all him. And yes, I know. I need to see Into the Woods, and I need to see... I'm sure there's other ones that I need to see.
Well, I don't want to tell you, too. The Johnny Depp Todd is missing my favorite part of Sweeney Todd, and that's the chorus, kind of giving you updates, the kind of the Greek chorus.
Greek chorus, yeah, I gotcha.
It's missing in that one, and I miss it, and it adds a lot of humor, and it adds a lot of flavor to the story to kind of break you from the onslaught of misery that is Sweeney Todd.
Oh, interesting. Then I wonder why they decided to take that out, because it feels like it's a big part of it.
Because casting and money.
Yeah, money, right? trying to fit an entire production into a 1.5 to 2 hour film.
Yeah.
1981, he worked on Merrily We Roll Along. This is about a man named Franklin Shepard, who once was a talented composer and now has become a Hollywood producer. There's a couple, or at least there's one track that's a through line through that documentary, Six by Sondheim, that was really cool. Mm-hmm. Sunday in the Park with George came out in 1984. This musical is inspired by the painting by George Seurat, the Grand Dame. What is it called? Or the Grand Jatte? It is, hold on a second, based on, I should know the name of this actual painting, Sunday Afternoon on the Island of Le Grand Jatte. It's that famous pointillist painting with all the people standing there all looking in the water. Nobody's looking at each other.
Yes, they're all looking at their phones.
They're all looking at their phones, exactly. The story is about a fictionalized version of the painter and how he immersed himself into his painting, which, you know, isn't too far off from the truth. This was a painting that Seurat worked on a ton of different versions of before he finally did the big canvas, did a lot of studies on it. And I think overall, the whole thing took a couple of years, 2 or 3 years for him to finish once he started working on it. The version I listened to had Jake Gyllenhaal as George, and it was pretty cool. And then I also heard one that had Bernadette Peters doing some singing.
That's the one I'm familiar with.
Is the Bernadette Peters
one? Yeah, Bernadette Peters. A lot of Sondheim stuff, yeah. So I wonder if Chicago Saturday in the Park would go as a good double listen with Sunday in the Park with George.
Oh, yeah, right. It would be the prequel.
Yeah.
I was like, is Chicago the musical production?
No, I was crossing too many streams keep up. I'm sorry.
1987, he worked on Into the Woods. This musical intertwines plots of a bunch of the different Grimm and Pearl fairy tales, exploring the consequences of their actions and wishes. And all of the stories hinge off of Baker and his wife.
So I built the onstage quick change costume for The Witch when I was working in theater in the early 90s for an outdoor production.
Because she had to be the witch in some scene or in some parts, but also be this
sexy Bernadette Peters and others.
Gotcha. Okay.
So in the first part of the show, she's this grizzled, scary looking witch. And then she drinks the potion that's made for her with the cow and the hair and all that kind of stuff. And then she gets all, you know, dead sexy. And then the show unfolds around that.
Yeah. This is one that, as popular as the movie was, the one with Meryl Streep that just came out a few years ago, never saw it, but now I kind of want to wait for it to see as soon as it comes on streaming. I'm going to watch it.
Yeah. It's got Anna Kendrick in it too. And I know you like her.
I do like her and Chris Pine, and it's got a great looking cast.
Yeah.
Let's see. It asked the question, by the way, what happens after the Happily Ever After? Into the Woods does. In 1990, he worked on Assassins. There's two versions of this one. The newer version starred Neil Patrick Harris as the Lee Harvey Oswald and introduced a new song
into
the show.
Come here and kill a president. No job, cupboard bare. One room, no one there. Hey, pal. Don't despair, you wanna shoot a president. Come on and shoot a president.
When I was going back through school to get my degree in theater, my second degree, I did the costume designs for this show for a project while I was working, and I added, different elements from scene from stuff. And it was fun to work on because for a show that's as lean as this is, there's a ton of depth and color to it.
This is one I probably would have enjoyed more if I had watched it as opposed to just listening to the soundtrack, because it uses the idea of a carnival game to review a group of historical figures who've attempted to or who have killed the president of the United States, and it explores what their point of view of America was and why they did what they did. So you get your Lee Harvey Oswald, you've got John Wilkes Booth,
Charles Guiteau,
who's the guy who tried to kill Reagan, Hinckley?
And Squeaky Frome and Sarah Jane Moore.
Yeah, it's a cool idea. This one I think is one I need to see visually.
Yeah, but finding a production nowadays is going to be super hard because I can't see how a production could go up and not being seen as a super politicized move.
Yeah, sure. Makes sense. In 1994, he worked on Passion, a musical in one act adapted from the movie Passion del More, which explores themes of love, sex, power, and manipulation. And in 2008, Roadshow. This tells the story of two brothers and their trip across America in the 1920s. Tell me about some statistics and general notes for Stephen Sondheim.
Okay, so he's won an Oscar. He's won 8 Tonys, 8 Grammys, a Pulitzer, a Laurence Olivier Award, the Presidential Medal of Freedom in 2015. That was given to him by a president that actually reads and goes to theater.
Wow.
A Drama Desk Award. He's won 8. Company was nominated for 14 Tonys and won 6. And I guess that 14 nominations is a record. In 2019, the Queen's Theater in the West End of London announced that it was going to change its name to the Sondheim Theater later that year. And he's involved with so many other projects and so many other things that we just decided we kind of stick to his major works. And even those we had to thin down.
Yeah, we totally did. So, Company is one I just really want to see after listening to I said this before, but I really, really enjoyed it. I guess I'll talk about that in just a couple of minutes anyway. Let's see. We don't really have we'll get to that because I do have an idea for a Stairway to Heaven, even though there isn't really a Stairway to Heaven. Let's talk about film adaptations. 1961, West Side Story, of course. There's a new version that's supposed to be coming out this year.
I didn't know anything about that until I was doing this research for this.
Yeah, and what was the one? Shoot, I want to say that there's a film production of...
Okay.
So Richard Linklater, who did the movie Boyhood, is working on a version of Merrily We Roll Along, but he actually wants to do it letting the characters age, so he's going to do it over the next 20 years. He's going to be doing filming of these characters as the actors
as age. They roll along
merrily.
How old is Art Linklater?
Not Art Linklater.
I'm sorry.
Richard Linklater.
How old is Richard?
He's a lot younger than Art Linklater, I'll tell you that. He's 59 years old.
Okay. So,
he's
could do that.
There. Yeah, feasibly. I mean, he kind of did something like this with the Sunset movies or Sunrise. Like, so he did Before Sunrise. So this is like Ethan Hawke and Julie Delpy. And then he did Before Sunset. And then he did Before Midnight. And it followed these same two characters. It was spread over 3 movies, but it followed these same 3 characters as they met and then grew older and met again and then got married and things like that. So he really likes these kind of sweeping life stories. Boyhood again, another good example of that. This kid grew old and basically he followed this life or created this character and just kind of had the actor age naturally within the movie. Let's see, Forum, funny thing happened on the way to the Forum, 1966. He did 5 songs for the movie Dick Tracy.
And Madonna sang one of them.
And won an Academy Award, if I remember correctly. That was, or at least was nominated for sure.
I think it was nominated. I think the only Academy that Dick Tracy won was for makeup with Doug Drexler.
Oh, sure. Makes sense. Another Gypsy movie in 1993. In 2007, he appeared on The Simpsons and the Johnny Depp Sweeney Todd, of course, as we talked about. And then the 6 by Sondheim, which is on HBO. All right. So I think we don't have a section here for his Stairway to Heaven song. Do you have a suggestion for what his Stairway to Heaven song would be?
I've got a couple. I think Pretty Women from Sweeney Todd probably ranks up there because that's been sung by everybody.
Stay within you, glances, stay forever, breathing lightly. Pretty women, blowing out their candles, combing out their.
And I think Comedy Tonight is probably up there because I can't think of anybody like our age or older that doesn't know that song somehow.
My pick would be Send in the Clowns.
Just when I stopped opening doors, finally knowing the one that I wanted was yours, making my entrance.
Okay, yeah, that's a good one.
For a little night music because everyone's covered it. As a matter of fact, it's other people's Stairway to Heaven songs. I think Barbara Streisand probably would get booed if she ever did a concert and she didn't perform Send in the Clowns.
So yesterday I watched the 1995 Judge Dredd and they make a joke with Send in the Clones.
See, so then you know you've made it when you get...
Yeah, I think he might be right about that.
Yeah, that's gonna be a class. It's also the most covered Sondheim song in my library. I had to go back and look and see what I had Sondheim was, because maybe for his 90th birthday I'll do a Sondheim episode of Coverville.
Ooh.
Anyway, all right. But what we did instead is we did a who would we like to hear perform your dream cast for a performance of a Sondheim musical. Now this one's a little tougher for me. You've worked on a bunch of these musicals. You've seen them. I've only seen West Side Story and Sweeney Todd, and I didn't want to pick one of those. So based on after listening to the soundtrack, I would love to see a version of The Company, or just Company, not The Company. What I read The Company of Company performed by the characters of Community. So
this is brilliant. This is absolutely brilliant. When you put this in late, and I read this reading ahead a little bit, and I had to mute myself because I was laughing because I'm thinking about all the things that could happen with this.
Totally right. So Jeff Winger would obviously be your Bobby, your Robert, and then you've got Dean Pelton, you've got Annie and Britta, who probably would be two of his three girlfriends. Troy and Abed could be one of the married couples.
Senior Chang has to be in it.
Oh, of course, Chang, Chevy Chase, Pierce. I feel like this, they've done musicals too, have done a couple musical episodes of Community. So this feels like it would be right up their alley, but it wouldn't be, you know, the actors playing the roles. It'd be them in character playing these other characters. I think it'd be hilarious.
That's brilliant. So
all right,
for mine, I honestly have been thinking about this since about 1990 when I first worked on Sweeney Todd. So my idea is very formed with this.
Sure. You've already got you've got visuals worked out.
Yeah, I've got sets drawn. I've kind of gone way overboard with this, but my idea is okay. You know how the Muppets do like Muppet Christmas Carol and Muppet Treasure Island. I want Muppet Sweeney Todd. So,
oh my God, okay.
We have Kermit as Sweeney Todd. We have Miss Piggy as Lovitz. That's a given.
Sure.
Okay, so then I had to do some looking because of modern day singing and youth and things like that. So I picked Anthony is Matt Cornett, and he's the one of the kids on the High School Musical, the series.
Okay.
That's on Disney Plus right now. He's got a great voice. I think he'd be a great Anthony. And then I picked Joanna. I picked Dove Cameron. Now, she's best known for her work in the Descendants movies, also a Disney thing. And the reason I'm familiar with...
Yeah, go ahead.
The reason I'm familiar with these is I have daughters, and we've watched all of them. So,
okay. Yeah, I've seen her in something else, too. Or maybe I'm thinking of someone else. No, maybe I'm thinking of someone else, because I'm looking at her. I thought she was the woman or the girlfriend on Gotham of young Bruce Wayne, but that's somebody else. Yeah. Oh yeah, she was on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Okay. All right, yeah. So Dove Cameron, and then if you know how they have human characters too, and so those are the two, and then I also want the judge to be Hugh Jackman, because I think he's old enough now that he could be intimidating, and he's tall, and he's good looking, and he could be creepy. I think he'd do a great job as the judge. Sure. Then the Fozzie is playing the Beetle, so he's the one who sings Ladies and Their Sensitivities.
Okay.
We have Toby is Scooter, and he's he's the young kid. Then we have Pirelli the Barber, and that's by Lou Zealand. Now, if you don't know who Lou Zealand is, he's the one that throws fish.
He's Ernie with a mustache and fish.
Yes. Basically. Yes.
Yes.
So I've got this all worked out. So Sondheim that's Company, hilarious. Muppet people, call me. Contact we can make me, magic.
Are you worried at all about the cannibalism and blood and... and gore.
You know what? I say they lean into it like comic book lean into it, like Kill Bill lean into it.
Okay. Wow. You might have to make this with an off-brand Muppets group, like the
Muppets,
Muppets, or the Muppets.
Yeah, the Muppets.
The Muppets.
Yeah. Hey, I know people who've worked on Avenue Q. I've interviewed a couple of them. So again, anybody who's willing to work with me on this idea, hey, the email's right there.
So now we're going to do our playlist. Of course, with this one, we're doing playlists from different shows, as you kind of would expect, but not necessarily specific versions or, you know, I'd like the only the 1997 Broadway revival of A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum for this one. Although if you do, right? If you have one you really like. I'll start. First one is going to come from West Side Story. And the song is Somewhere. Or There's a Place for Us. I've always loved this song, and it gets referenced in one of my, actually my favorite song of all time, which is Romeo and Juliet by Dire Straits. Two songs get referenced in that, by the way, My Boyfriend's Back by the Shangri-Las and There's a Place for Us from West Side Story. It's I don't know, it's just such a hopeful and beautiful song that I had to include it in here. The next one is The Ladies Who Lunch. This is from Company, and it's a couple of really catty women looking at the women, like they're sipping their martinis and watching these women go by.
Another $1,000, a matinee, a pinter play, perhaps a piece of Mahler's. I'll drink to that. And one for Mahler.
And kind of being catty about him, but I really dug the whole vibe of this song and the whole musical, and this song is just hilarious. Kind of on that same note, my third one comes from Follies. It's the story of Lucy and Jesse.
Here's a little story that should make you cry about two unhappy dames. Let us call them Lucy X and Jesse Y, which are not their real names. Now Lucy has the purity along with the unsurety that comes with being only 21.
Again, this is another song that's got some fast lyrics, kind of a hallmark of Stephen Sondheim's writing, but really clever lyrics. And this one's got some really fast, clever lyrics, superimposing and finding things that rhyme with Lucy that you can apply to Jesse, and finding things about Jesse that you can apply to Lucy. And it's really cool. Lucy's dressy, but Jesse's Goosey or something like that. I can't remember it, but that's why I'm not a composer. Sunday from Sunday in the Park. This was a late entry after watching the Six by Sondheim, but it was really well performed in that the version I saw. And this is one that you can rent for $2 or $3. And it's the one with Mandy Patinkin as George and Bernadette Peters as the woman who loves him, but he's super hyper focused on the painting and she feels like she's always going to come second. It's got all the people kind of coming together and taking their positions, and then they just turn into the painting, which is really cool. My last one on my list is Back to Company, Another 100 People.
It's a city of strangers. Some come to work, some to play. A city of strangers. Some come to stare, some to stay. And every day, the ones who stay can find each other in the crowded streets and the guarded parks. By the rusty fountains and
this
the dusty
that-
trees.
Was that appeared on that soundtrack, on that tribute album that Melanie C. from the Spice Girls did called Stages, where she does all of the musicals, songs from musicals. And not being familiar with Company, this is one that's like, okay, yeah, it's a good song, next. And then after listening to the soundtrack to Company, I had to go back and revisit the Melanie C. version. It's like, okay, I really appreciate this a lot more than I did the first time listening through. So hand it to her for making me go back and re-listen and appreciate something a lot more than I did the first time. How about you, Hammond? You tell me the five songs you've got on the list.
I like your list. Your list is really good.
Well, thank you.
For my first one, I picked Something Just Broke, and this is from the revival soundtrack of Assassin's Own with Dr. Horrible in it. This was added for the revival, and it really kind of sums up the feeling that... It plays right after Kennedy is assassinated.
Something just went a little dark. Something just went.
And I wondered,
I was scared of
what would
something
follow.
Something to be mended.
Made me wonder who we are.
Something we'll have to weather.
Seeing all those
bringing
torches.
Bringing us all together.
He was me.
He was
if
us.
Only for a moment.
I'll remember it forever.
And it's a really great song. I love this song. As soon as I heard it, I'm like, this isn't in the original. And I really fixated on this song in the revival production. It's great. My next one is Not While I'm Around from Sweeney Todd. This is the one where Toby is trying to sing to Miss Lovitz.
I'll send them howling. I don't care. I got wet.
Affectionate child it is.
No one's gonna hurt you. No one's gonna dare.
And he finds out that she has his purse. Well, I skipped that part, but I used to sing the song to my kids all the time when they were little as like a lullaby.
Uh-huh.
And now my 15-year-old, they loved it. But now my 15-year-old's seen Sweeney Todd and has lots of questions about why I was singing a song from a cannibalistic musical to her.
Right.
You know, the funny thing is she has no problem with I sing Let's Build a Snowman, but she has a real problem with this one.
Sure. I wonder why, huh?
Do you know what Let's Build a Snowman is from?
It's from Frozen.
No.
Oh, no. Let's Build a Snowman.
Let's Build a Snowman is from the Alfred Packer story, Cannibal the Musical.
Okay.
By Trey Parker and Matt Stone.
Right. The South Park guys.
Yeah,
right.
Uh-huh,
yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
okay, that's a totally different thing. I was thinking, oh, yeah, the Frozen song. Sure. I can see
Do
that.
You Want to Build a Snowman? Very, very, yes. Very different.
Very different and very different subject matter.
Yeah.
Okay.
The next one I picked was Comedy Tonight from Forum.
Nothing for crowns. Bring on the lovers, liars, and clowns. Old situations, new complications. Nothing for dentists or polite. Tragedy tomorrow.
This is probably one of the most fun songs ever written, and I love it. I end up whistling the tune all the time. It pulls me out of a bad mood if I'm listening to it. I mean, it's a fantastic piece of music.
It totally is. You beat me to it, by the way. Like, that was one of the first things I heard, because the soundtrack comes up so early in our list. And I was like, oh, yeah. Da, 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 da. And I got over here to write it, and you're like, ah, dang it, he already stuck his flag in it, which is fine, which is fine. I found five that I really like otherwise, but...
we would have arm wrestled for it.
No, no, y'all, I'd let you have it. At two, Hammond.
And the next one I picked was Agony from Into the Woods. Now, on the first listen of this song, you kind of blow through it because it's just two guys singing and being very dramatic, and you kind of blow through it. I did the first couple times I heard it. Then you start listening to the lyrics, and you realize this song is hilarious.
What's as intriguing or half so fatiguing as what's out of reach? Am I not sensitive, clever, well-mannered, considerate, passionate, charming, as kind as I'm handsome and heir to a throne?
You are everything maidens could wish for.
And
I need to give another listen. This is the one with Chris Pine sings. And,
yes.
And,
uh-huh. Soundtrack. Yeah. This is them talking about all the quote unquote trials and tribulations of being a prince.
Okay.
It is absolutely hysterical. And I admire this song more and more every time I listen to it, just because it's so clever.
Very cool. All right. Can we go listen to it and read the lyrics next time?
Yeah. 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 It's really worth it. Like I said, first couple times I just blew right through it because I'm like, oh, I don't care. And then all of a sudden I cut the lyrics. I'm like, oh, this is brilliant. And now I can't let it go. And the last one I picked is another national anthem, also from Assassins.
To the hearts that go on pounding to the sound, getting louder every year. Listen to the sound.
Take a look around.
Where the other national anthem pokes the ones that can't get in to the ballpark.
This is actually a really kind of meaningful song. This is not just a throwaway song in a musical. This is a song that kind of explains about how a lot of people feel when they don't fit the mold, and how there's not a national anthem for them. There's not a sense of belonging for them. So they kind of have to create their own reasons and their own place. And it's a really cool song, and it really sums up a lot of feelings that I think a lot of people have that they can identify with, but they don't want to admit out loud.
That's cool. It's another one that must have just slipped by me, not knowing the lyrics. So that's cool. All right, excellent. Another national anthem. Perfect. So there you go. Your Visitation of Sondheim. And of course, as we always do, we've got the show notes and the Spotify list. You can go listen to.
Are we just gonna pick like a Sondheim retrospective for the Amazon?
Yeah, there is a best of kind of Sondheim album that's on Amazon that I'll link to, and it's got stuff from all the different musicals.
I think that's a good idea.
But like all of his best stuff. So yep, you'll find a link to that, and we'll talk about more about that in a minute as well. Hammond, next episode, man, you and I are getting back into the college rock of the 90s. This is actually a sponsored episode. John Yanella sponsored this one, and we'll have him on to talk about why he suggested this one. But this is cool. I like it when we do a genre as opposed to just a specific band, because it gives us so much more to look at.
And this is right? A big genre. This covers everything from like that acoustic rock of Sex and Candy all the way up to like Limp Bizkit.
Right. This is going to be an excuse for me to listen a little bit more to bands like Sonic Youth and
Third Eye Blind.
What's that?
Third Eye Blind.
No, definitely not Third Eye Blind. I don't know if I would. I guess they are kind of college rock, but I don't know. But all these bands that, like, you know, the cooler kids in art school were listening to, and I was like, oh yeah, I know that one song. Yeah, they're good. I like those guys. But you know, now I got to listen to some more Meat Puppets and
Butthole Surfers
and sure, all that stuff.
Yeah, I have a feeling that I'm probably gonna, we're picking 10 songs, right? This is a 10 song list.
We are picking 10 songs.
Okay,
exactly,
good.
Because we really don't have a who'd you like to see them cover or a Stairway to Heaven song for that one either. So,
okay, good. So. Because there's going to be a lot of things that I want to bring up that I listened to in college because I was part of the local music scene in school.
Sure.
So there's going to be some things that you probably don't know, but I'm going to try to share with you beforehand so you're at least familiar with it.
Okay, cool. And of course, we're not going to talk about bands we'll talk about them, but we can't include bands like Cake or who else have we done? That
kind Toad of the Wet Sprocket, Third Eye Blind.
Right, right.
Mushroom exactly. Head. Darn. Dream Theater.
Are they really, are they college rock?
They started, in the 90s. I mean, 93.
All right. Fair enough.
93, 96, something like that. So Spock Spirit's right. Out. Damn it.
I'm basically leaning towards the bands that the people who I look to for musical influence had the t-shirts of that they'd wear to class.
Guess who released albums in the 90s though for college?
What's that?
Guess who released albums?
Oh, guess who?
Yeah, guess who released albums in the 90s? A couple of them. Dream Theater.
I don't know who. Oh, of course. How long were those albums took place from 1993 to 1996.
Actually, it's funny because their greatest hit came out in 92. It's an 8.5-minute long song.
And with that, I think we're going to close up this episode of Soundography. If you want to get in touch with us, email us soundographypodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter @TheSoundography. Of course, our website is soundography.com. And for every episode, you're going to find our playlist, a link to our Spotify playlist. As I mentioned, you get to hear those 10 songs we like from Sondheim, as well as a link to Amazon where you can pick up the that greatest hits, Sondheim's greatest hits album that I was talking about. Of course, it's a great place for you to leave your feedback. We love to hear what you have to say, so make sure that you leave us a note on in the show notes of the episode. You'll also find a place to support us. We love your Patreon support. It keeps the lights on, keeps the show going. So if you've got a buck or two rolling around in your pocket every month, come on, you know you do. Go to patreon.com/soundography and throw it our way, and we'll be especially appreciative. There's even higher rewards if you want to make like John Dionella and make us listen to something for a week. Find out more about that by going to patreon.com/soundography. And of course, reviews. We love to see reviews. That's my Sondheim right there. Leave those reviews wherever you get your podcasts, whether that's Apple Music, can't really say iTunes anymore, or Spotify or Spreaker, Stitcher, Spanker, wherever you get your podcasts. I don't know if you get podcasts from Spanker, but maybe we don't want you to leave a review for us there. I don't know.
That'd be a bad thing.
Hammond, is there an overture to close with from you?
No, I just really enjoyed this week. I worked in theater for a lot of years, and this brought back a lot of memories.
For sure. Yeah. Introduced me to a bunch of stuff that I want to delve into further. So I thank you for that. And listeners, we thank you as well on behalf of Hammond Chamberlain. This is Brian Abbott saying thanks for listening. We'll see you next time right here on Soundography.
Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.